A little bit about Parshas Kiseitse, because I'm pretty sure that's this week's Parsha, although I'm not really sure what day it is or what city I'm in. But anyway, so let's begin. During Chodesh Elul, when we learn Parshas Kiseitse, we often very rightfully focus on the very beginning of Parshas Kiseitse, because we understand Kiseitse Melchama Aloivecha. The Melchama refers to Melchamas Hayetze, right? That's how all the Bali Moser always darshan the initial psukim of the parsha. That it's a critical battle that we wage this time of year. It's a Melchama Aloivecha, Melchama against the Yetzer Hara. And yet, and even the content of Kiseitse Melchama Aloivecha suggests that there's a Melchama about Taiva. Meaning it's not even so drushy, it's pretty literal also, that there's a milchama that's going on in that parsha with one's taivos, where a person maybe concedes a little bit, but that's for a different time. So that's normally the focus. Yet, at the end of the parsha, there's a lot of powerful things that go on there also that probably are worthy of our attention. First of all, the only Kriyas HaTorah Midaraisa appears in this week's parsha. Melchamas Amalek, which we are Yotzin Mitzvah Daraisa before Purim, but you know, famously, the Maram Shik writes, I think in the name of Chassam Sofer, if it's a leap year and there's going to be more than 12 months between one Parsha Zachar and the next, you should dafka have Kavana, that you want to be Yotzin the Mitzvah Daraisa this week when you lay Parsha Samalek, because it could be that you have an obligation to do so once every 12 months. I remember I was once, when I was in high school, I was in Rav Yonasan Sachs' shul in Passaic. I guess it was Parsha Kiseitse, and they announced before the Maftir that everyone should have in mind to be Yotzin the Mitzvah Daraisa of Zechiras Amalek. So the Parsha concludes with Melchamas Amalek, you know, and we know we're familiar with that Parsha. The few psukim that precede Parsha Zachar goes through the importance of honest weights and measures. Lo yia lucha b'kizcha even ve'even gedola u'ketan, or even va'even. It's not only about cheating in business, but that a person not just shouldn't use unjust or unfair or fraudulent weights and measures, but a person should not have b'yadcha b'kizcha. He shouldn't have in his possession. He shouldn't have such things, because these are tools of cheating. So even if a person is never actually cheating, one should not possess the tools with which to cheat. You know, I think back to like elementary school, and you know that kid in like the fourth grade that showed up with the trick deck of cards, right? I mean, you knew, don't trust that kid, right? Like that was like Yaduwa. That's just the fact that he has it. You know, I don't know what he's doing with it, what he's not doing with it, but I know there's no good reason to have it. So Rashi notes that the juxtaposition of these two parshios, of the Midos and Mishkalos, with the Parsha of Amalek, is that im shakarta b'midos and Mishkalos, having doeg megiroi ha'oyev, that you know when you're going to have to worry about Amalek coming? When you're dishonest with your weights and measures, when you are in possession of these types of Mishkalos that are fraudulent. And the question is that normally when we think about Oshim, it's mita keneged mita, it's quid pro quo, that you do something and HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes you in kind, you know, in greater measure, in lesser measure, but it's at least somewhat matches up. But what in the world is the connection between dishonest measures and being vulnerable to an enemy attack, a brutal physical attack of an enemy? And to strengthen the question, the Nitziv points out that in the Midbar there probably weren't too many transactions with weights and measures. Meaning, like, our basic needs were taken care of, right? Shelter was taken care of, and food was taken care of. We had the mud, we got it daily, we had water from the Be'er. There probably wasn't much in terms of weights. I mean, when do you buy a pound of something? You go to the bakery, you buy a pound of cookies. You know, you buy a pound of flour, a pound of coleslaw. It's always about food, that you're buying things by the pound, and that there's going to be weights and measures. And we didn't need any of that. We didn't have any of that. So why was like this such a critical, you know, there was no need to hustle. There was no need to, you know, try to cut corners. Why was this such a critical message at that point in time, that Nitziv asks? Furthermore, second question, there's an expression that Chazal had, that Dibur Chachamim Balashon Guzma. Now when the Chacham speak, they tend to sometimes speak in exaggerated terms. And it's important to realize that, meaning not everything that Chazal say is meant to be taken literally. Sometimes there are certain numbers that Chazal use that they that are clear indicators that it's not that it's very likely, at least, that it's not meant to be taken literally. They use the number 400 a lot. They use the number 70. You know, the chilazim is all the achas l'shivim shana. It means once in a lifetime. It doesn't mean that it's it means it once in a very long time. It's a rare sighting. It doesn't mean that it happens, you know, that there's some exact Yovel type of event where all the chilazims come out of the water, right? In all likelihood, that's what it means. So the Chazal speak b'lashon guzma, and it's not only when they use numbers, but it's also when they express like the severity of certain averos. Kol hakoes is ki'ilu oved avodah zara, right? So I always give that as an example. It's dibuchad b'lashon guzma, right? What does it mean? Kol hakoes is ki'ilu oved avodah zara. You get angry, it's as if you do avodah zara. Lahalacha, is that true? Lamaisa. Lemaisa, someone holds a gun to your head, says, "Worship that avodah zarah, I'm going to kill you." The halacha is, you have to take the bullet. Now that I worship the avodah zarah, someone holds a gun to your head and says, "Get angry, or I'm going to kill you." Right? So do you have to say, "No, I absolutely will not get angry. I'm going to remain calm, and nothing you do is going to make me angry." Is that really the halacha? You're not allowed to get angry even at threat. No, it's not the halacha. It's dibur chachamim v'lashon guzma. But one such example of that seems to be the Gemara of Basra Daf Peches. The Gemara says that the avon of mishkalos, the sin of false weights, is chamur from gilui arayos. It's more severe than not like akin to, similar to, in some way comparable to. More severe than gilui arayos. Now, even if cheating and stealing were so terrible that in some way it would rival gilui arayos, but to call it more severe, more chamur, and Chazal specifically, they don't talk about stealing being chamur than gilui arayos. Avon mishkalos, a very specific type of cheating, right? It's not cheating on an exam. It's not stealing money from a cash register. It's avon mishkalos. That specifically is more chamur than gilui arayos. What did Chazal have in mind when they spoke about that particular avera being an example of one of the most heinous of all crimes? And third, a young man came over to me a while back and with a mishnah Pirkei Avos, I think it was in Camp Kaylee maybe, came over to me and said, the mishnah says that you should be zayir b'mitzvah kala k'b'chamura. And he said, what exactly is a mitzvah kala and what exactly is a mitzvah chamura? Meaning, he said, I was always raised to learn that all mitzvahs are significant, which is sort of the point of the mishnah. That's why you have to be zayir b'mitzvah kala k'b'chamura. But even to acknowledge that there's such a thing as a mitzvah kala and a mitzvah chamura, how do we assess what's a mitzvah kala and a mitzvah chamura? And the obvious answer is that a mitzvah kala is one that doesn't have a very great punishment, whereas a mitzvah chamura is one like a losa, say, for which you're chayv misa, so misa b'day adam. Those are the most severe of all things. But when you think about, like, if I were to ask you, the gimel averos chamuros, avodah zarah, gilui arayos, shfichas damim. Yet those three don't have a stronger punishment than other averos for which you're chayav misa. Chil Shabbos, for example, is skila, and that's not one of the averos chamuros, even though it's pretty bad, obviously, and it's in a certain sense more chamur than the averos chamuros. So what then makes those averos chamuros? I mean, why are those yahari bal yavrelo? What elevates them? So again, three questions were, number one, what's the connection between the mishkalos and that you have to worry about an attack of Amalek when you're dishonest in your ways? Second, why is it that the Gemara in Bava Basra says avon mishkalos is more chamur than gilui arayos? And third, what exactly is a mitzvah kala and a chamura in the context of the Mishnah? So the Netziv develops the following yisod, which is a fascinating yisod, an important yisod. He said, you know, when we think about averos, which we should be thinking about this time of year, meaning there is a tshuva process that is hopefully already in effect, that we're already working on, and that tshuva process involves thinking about what we do wrong, what our averos are. So when we think about averos, it's not only important to think about what we've done wrong, but it's also important to think about what were the motivations that brought us to that avera. Like, what did it? What was it that we... What kind of situation did we have to be in that made us more vulnerable to that particular avera? And the Netziv writes that there are basically three primary reasons that people sin in general. He says, first, sometimes a person sins because Hashem is just not enough a part of his life. He just doesn't think of Hashem as much as he should be thinking of Hashem. There's a sense of shichas Hashem. Not shichas Hashem in the sense that if someone comes over to him and says, is there a Hashem? And he's going to say, I forgot. No, meaning it means like he's just not like at the center of his consciousness. He's not actually thinking about Hashem. Hashem's not enough of a reality. It could be that you could ask him all 13 Ikari Amun, and he says, I believe Be'emunah Shleima, every single one of them. But Hashem is not a reality. I don't know if I mentioned to you guys, yes, I was having a conversation with someone the other night. Someone was in my office late at night, and he was going through some of the struggles that he has with one of his children. And he's like, davening really hard, and he spent a lot of effort and a lot of money and a lot of agmas nefesh and trying to help this kid out. He has real issues. The child has real problems. And the guy said to me at some point, he said, you know, when I daven to the Ribbono Shel Olam, when I daven, I say to Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, he's not only my son, he's your son also. He's your son also. The only thing is, I don't know what to do for him. You know what to do for him. He's your son, and he's both of our sons. I don't know what to do. You know what to do. So help me out here. And like that, that way of expressing oneself is like so real. It's so genuine. You know, like that's someone who doesn't have a shichas Hashem. It's like you're living with Hashem and you can talk to him in like a real, open kind of way, that it's a reality. It's not just, you know, I'm being mekayim the mitzvah of tefillah, you know, right now. It's you're doing what tefillah is. You're living with the Ribbono Shel Olam. A lot of times, even when people learn Torah, you know, we learn God's autobiography, and we sometimes forget Hashem in the process of learning God's autobiography. I'm not going to get into what Torah Lishma and you know, Nefesh HaChayim versus Balatanya. We don't need to get into any of that. But just like a sense that, you know, to take a moment before, or after, at some point, to enjoy the fact that we're zocha to learn Torah Hashem, that we're zocha to read and delve into the Ribbono Shel Olam's autobiography, his life story, so to speak. You know, the Chassidus of Art, Kol Shochech Dover Echad Mishnas Al Chayiv Misa. The Mishnah says, Kol Shochech Dover Echad. Anyone who forgets the Dover Echad, you forget the Echad, the one and only, the Ribbono Shel Olam, Mishnas from his learning, so he's Chayiv Misa. He's going to be Chayiv Misa. That a person has to always remember the Dover Echad as well. And the paradigmatic example of this kind of Aveira that the Mitziv highlights, of someone who has a sense of Shichas Hashem, is Avodah Zarah. There's no greater Shichas Hashem than actively turning away from the Ribbono Shel Olam and going to some alternate source of worship. And a second motivation the Mitziv highlights is that good old-fashioned Taivos. People have a Yetzer Hara, and at times that Yetzer Hara is very difficult to control. And it seems to me that the Yetzer Hara that the Parsha of Yefas Torah addresses is, you know, that. It's the Yetzer Hara, it's the Taivos. It's that a person has, you know, a sense of Taivos. And that's perhaps why Chazal tell us that taking Yefas Torah will lead to Ben Sor Ramora, because a person who exhibits a lack of self-control, you know, when his Taivos strikes, he acts on it, will set the kind of example that will naturally lead a child to not understand limits and to not know how to say ad kan v'lo yoter, you know, like this is just not acceptable for me. This is where I can't go, even though I want it. I can't always necessarily have it. That's the direct connection between the parsha of Yefas Torah, and it's one of the great challenges of our generation, because we're living in a generation now, at least in America or in our parts of America, where very often adults have serious problems with limits. Kids have problems with limits, yeah. You know, that's kids have to learn. It takes time to learn limits. A lot of adults have serious problems with limits. Like, there's nothing that's enough, and there's nothing that, you know, we just... there's no taiva that can't be fulfilled. The yisod of, like, you know, all the fancy Pesach programs and all that, like, the whole yisod of how they're run is that whatever desire you have is met before you even realize you have that desire. Like, there's no such thing as no. There's no such thing as, you know, we're not serving that today. Oh, we're serving steak, but you're in the mood for duck? No problem. We got a duck right here. We'll shaft it. There you go. Like, it's like the total lack of limits that many adults in our communities live their lives with is a yefas toar kind of type of, like, every taiva has to be filled, and then that leads to Ben Sodom Mar. The paradigmatic example of such a sin is Gilei Arayos, of course, right? That's where, and by the way, you should think, you know, a lot of times guys in yeshiva think, yeah, those 30-something-year-olds, those are a bunch of shkatzim that they don't know how to live their life, that they're, you'll get there. it's not always so easy. A friend of mine told me last night, I was talking to an old friend of mine, and he said that he was once driving with his father, and he was passing through Baltimore, and they went to Rabbi Franz Shear, and it happened to have been part of Kisei, and Rabbi Franz said, over, it's going back 25 years or something, Rabbi Franz said in the end of Parsha Shoftim, we learn about who gets to go to Mochama, right? So who goes to Mochama? Only the biggest tzaddikim. Right? As Rav Shaptali says, over the Purim Shvil they did in Valazhin, where they did a whole scene of a Kohen Mashiach Mochama making the announcements. Me Isha Yari Verachaleva, the two people walk out, and who Shair is Isha, and someone else walks in, Banabai is Fulachanacha, and someone else, Natakarim, someone else, who's Yari about Avero Shabiyado, and then everyone walks off, and only two people left are Reb Chaim Brisker and the Chafetz Chaim to fight the Melchama. So they say, Reb Chaim Brisker said, yeah, but the next scene is when we win. Meaning, it could be that, but the idea that at the end of our Shoftim is just it's only the biggest tzaddikim. It's people who have no fear of Avera Shabiyadam, and then the next few pesukim you learn is, oh, there's the Yafas Torah, you're going to have a taiva, you're going to go after. Like, how does that match? I mean, the people that are going out to war are not the people that are going to find the Yafas Torah. So and have such a taiva for the Yafas Torah. And Rabbi Franz suggested, in the base Medrash there were tzaddikim. Send them out to war, and then it's not so easy to be a tzaddik anymore. It's a much greater challenge to be a tzaddik at that point. So the example of such a category of averos is Gilei Arayos. And a third category is that many times we sin, it's not because of a desire or illicit taiva, but it's just lahachis. We're angry at God, angry at somebody else, and we just do things lahachis. And the example of that is Shvichas Damim. Right? Shvichas Damim is an avera that's lahachis. So, when you put it all together, when it says in Mitziv, you have three primary motivations of avera: shichas Hashem, taivos, and lahachis. And the paradigmatic examples of each category is you have avodah zarah and gilei arayos and shvichas damim. So, in a sense, that's the chamuros. And of the three categories, the Mitziv points out the worst of the three is avodah zarah. Because a person who doesn't see Hashem in his life is unlikely to do tshuva. He experienced taivos or negative feelings toward others, other shortcomings. You can turn to Hashem to help you address them, and you can work on them. A person who doesn't have the address to go to, he doesn't see Hashem in his life, it's going to be much, much harder. And when viewed in that light, you understand why Shabbos, which has the most severe punishment, is not one of the Gimel Chamuros, because the three Averos are all headings of their respective categories. Why does a person violate Shabbos? It doesn't fit neatly into any of the categories. It could be for any of those reasons, really. It could be that, what motivates Chol Shabbos? He has a taiva to watch a playoff game or something like that, so he has to be Chol Shabbos. Or that's an offshoot of Gilei Arayos, that's taiva. Or he violates Shabbos because I can't make a living otherwise. Many people in the early part of the 20th century lost their jobs. They can't make a living otherwise. So that's similar to Avodah Zarah. What do you mean? You don't realize that Kodesh Baruch Hu signs your paychecks ultimately? It's a Shechas Hashem. So Shabbos may be more severe, but it doesn't neatly fit one of the categories like the others do. And when a person is dishonest and he takes advantage of others, he may be doing so because he's experiencing a Gilei Arayos moment, a taiva for money, or he may be doing it because he's experiencing an avodah zarah moment, just lack of avunah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. When you keep false weights and measures, that is not a sin of taiva. No one, when they're shaving down their weights in order to, or whatever they do, shaving down their weights in order to be able to cheat people out of a few ounces of whatever it is they're selling, no one has a taiva at that moment. Because at that moment, there's no customer there, there's no dollar signs in your eyes that you can see, there's nothing striking you at that moment. It's premeditated. That's premeditated. And when it's premeditated, that's most likely an avodah zarah type of avera. That's most likely the kind of avera that doesn't see a Kodesh Baruch Hu in your life. And that's worse than the attitude of people who violate the category of averos represented by Gilei Arayos. So when Chazal say that someone who keeps false weights and measures is chamur, it's worse than Gilui Arayos. It means it's worse than Gilui Arayos in the sense that a person who violates that kind of aveira does not have as clear a path to tshuva and to self-rectification as a person who violates Gilui Arayos, a sin of taiva, which is the, again, paradigmatic example of a sin of taiva. And that, says the Netziv, is the connection between the Avon Mishkalos and Melchalos Amalek. Above all else, Amalek represents Asher Karcha B'derach, that the things just happen in the world, the Kodesh Baruch Hu is not running the world. The first description of Melchalos Amalek in Parshas B'Shalach is preceded by people wondering, Hayesh Hashem B'kirbeinu, is Hashem really with us? Now, Amalek represents that sense of uncertainty. It's Gematria Safek, and an attitude that Hashem is not in charge. So it makes plenty of sense that when we keep faulty weights and measures, and we express a lack of recognition of the Ribbono Shel Olam in the world, of the Ribbono Shel Olam in our lives, we're going to be susceptible to the attacks of Amalek. We're going to be susceptible to what comes at the very end of the parasha. That's really, if you had to highlight Chodesh Elul, the Avoda of Chodesh Elul, I just gave a shiur yesterday to Rabbi Yehuda Willits shiur, I'm going to give the same shiur again tonight, I think, in Queens, that I heard from Rabbi Yisrael Reisman on the plane back from Chicago. I was listening to his shiur. They titled the shiur something like Tekiah Shofar, Mitzvah Shmir, or Mitzvah Tekiah, which is like the most classic, you know, halacha lamdas topic of shofar ever. But it was like an amazing shiur. He didn't just do the simple chakira with the five nafkaminas or whatever, which is great, it's great to do. But then he developed that into like expressing what the avoda of the Elul is, which I'm not going to go through the whole thing right now. But ultimately, at the end of the day, he says the avoda of the Elul, and he quotes in the name of Rav Isaac Scherer and others, is to recognize that there's a melech, to recognize that you have a relationship with the melech. Recognize that there's a Ribbono Shel Olam in the world, and that our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam is a real relationship. That Hashem is not an idea; Hashem is a reality, and that reality should govern the way we live our lives. You know, when we start davening, the Baal Shachar starts on the Yom Narayim before he can even get up there to the Amud. From his seat, he screams out HaMelech. The emphasis on the Malchus Hashem and the reality of the Melech and the relationship of the Melech is what Chodesh Elul is about, and is probably about more than anything else, and the Tshuva process is about more than anything else, because once we have that relationship, we then have our path. We then can you know, no matter how chamor the averos are, no matter how frequent the averos are, there's a relationship, there's a path to get back to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that's ultimately what it is. Okay.